welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Mark Simon, along with SIS VP of Football, Matt Manicharian. We've got a great guest today. We want to talk as much NFL draft as possible, so let's get right to it.
And we bring in Ryan McChrystal, a.k.a. Draft Ace. Ryan's Twitter is CFB Film Room. He's another SIS data super user, and he writes for sharpfootball.com. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me.
As someone who is a super user, what's an example of something that you learned about a player in this year's draft class that you could only get from our data?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long list of stuff that I could cite here. User data all the time. Anytime I'm going through prospects, I like to pair. I'm a big believer in blending traditional scouting with the advanced stats. I just think it takes your ability to evaluate players to another level. One that I'll mention here, though, I think it's particularly relevant this year is the ability to use your stats to isolate production based on where a player lines up. And with Trevon Walker potentially going number one overall on Thursday night, I think that's a really relevant conversation this year because, you know, with him, one of the things that often gets brought up is sort of the excuse for his lack of production is basically the role that he plays in that defense, which his versatility is extremely valuable. And one of the reasons why I see him having like a pretty safe floor, because you can use him as a chess piece on your defense and move him all around. You got to love that aspect of his game, but using your stats, you can really isolate, you can break down specific parts of his game and isolate what he does in different areas. So if you look at passing downs, like on third down and 5 yards or longer, he's lining up on the interior 46% of the time. So again, that does explain some of the lack of production, but we can also remove that and look out only at his production when he's on the edge in those situations. And one of the reasons why I'm not as high on him as other is his lack of production in that specific area. On those third and long situations, when he's on the edge only, he's generating a 9.1% pressure rate. When you compare that to Thibodeau and Hutchinson, the other pass rushers at the top of the board, it's 19% for Thibodeau, 17% for Hutchinson. So like with Walker, love the traits, love the versatility, but you can kind of see like he doesn't quite pair those traits with the production the same way that Thibodeau and Hutchinson do to a slightly better degree.
Yeah, it's something like, what has he done? He hasn't produced anywhere near to the level of those guys. What will he do? You know, the jury's still out on that. So anybody that acts like we know, like, oh, it'd be a dumb pick to make, like, okay, pump your brakes, guy. This is the NFL draft we're talking about here. I think you're spot on, because what I love about him is I'm picturing that he comes in, starts on first and second down on the outside, and then he bumps down into that three technique on third down, and you could have a real plus interior pass rusher. Unfortunately, that's not what the production's been to this point. There are flash plays that you see on film, but we do the expected pressure rate and pressures above expectation. And that really boils down exactly what you were talking about. Your alignment, what type of drops you're seeing from the offense, right? You're more likely to get a pressure on a 7-step drop than on an RPO if you're facing against that. Very hard to generate pressures there. Given all of that, he's still below average amongst the players in this class. He's minus 2% pressures above expectation. So the production hasn't been there yet. So I see him the same way that you do. Boring.
Brian, I think we've talked about this in the past couple of weeks. Where is an appropriate place for him to go in the draft?
If it were up to me, I'd probably feel more comfortable drafting him like somewhere in the teens. In the top 10, if I were the one making the call, I would just feel so much more comfortable spending that investment on a guy who has more of the blend of the traits and of the production. And then once you start to drop into like the middle of the first round, end of the first round, you start to lose that. There just aren't enough players who blend both of those things. So that's when you can start to go after Walker, who has the traits, but because of the versatility also, I think, has a pretty nice floor too.
Yeah, it's like if you picture the pie chart of what you want out of a good football player, if you're talking about prospects, you want guys that are productive, really athletic, that have clean bill of health, that have great character. However you divide up that pie chart, it's really hard for me to arrive at a place where, unless there's injury stuff we don't know about or character stuff we don't know about, that the combination of productive and athletic from those two guys gets supplanted by the athletic, but not so much production. It's just the way you break it down is so simple. Like, yeah, get the guys that are both first, and then you have to start choosing between one or the other. You're right. Like, and then you have your dart throws at the end. It's almost like it seems too simple when you break it down. That maybe Trevon Walker is just that unbelievable in an interview.
Yeah.
Last week, I think we compared him to Anthony Bennett in the NBA draft a few years back. when you're looking at stats, and this is kind of a continuation of the previous question, and we could go in any number of directions here. We'll let you pick the direction, essentially. Skill position, lineman, whatever. Is there like a number that you view, or not a number, but just a data point? You honed in on a couple already, but is there a data point that you view most favorably when trying to do evaluation?
Yeah, another one that I use specifically with the offensive lineman, and specifically really early in the process, I like looking at your stats to kind of get me started on offensive lineman, just because from doing this a long time, this will be my 19th year covering the draft. I've sort of recognized over the years that offensive line is probably like a weak spot for me. I'm not as good at just purely watching those players and evaluating them. And so I find it really helpful to go to those stats first and sort of like use that as a way to like narrow down the pool. Like, who do I really need to pay attention to? Cause you know, I can look at lists and see names out there and then sort of like use that list to be like, okay, like who has really good, I look at your total points metrics to start out. And just sort of like that all encompassing stat. You know, I don't put much stock in like a guy who ranks 12th being better than the guy who ranks 18th. But if a guy ranks 12th and a guy ranks 90th, that is probably really meaningful. There's probably something there. And so that'll help me kind of like narrow down. I want to look at the guys who are at the top of a stat like that to sort of like get me pointed in the right direction.
Mark, is that similar for you? Is that when you look at something like, you've been a baseball analyst forever, so I'm kind of getting with the OGs here. Is that how, do you often like start off with that sort of thing and then go in that direction or?
So an example of that would be like start of the season, right? We've got these 15 game samples and I'm hearing people that are referencing our defensive run save totals. And that seems kind of odd. And I think when you look in particular at a stat like that, you shouldn't be looking at it till you get to about 40, 50 games. But there is a situation where I think you can look at it. And I think it's the McChrystal example there, where you've got the Padres in first and you've got whoever currently ranks last in defensive run save. I think there's something there. Again, it's early. I think you want to look at the totality of things. But I feel like that would be an example on the baseball side, definitely, where the different, I'm not necessarily saying that the Padres are a better defensive team than the fifth best defensive team at this point, but I'm feeling a little more confident about them being better than the 21st, 22nd, 25th, whatever.
And I'm sorry for putting you on the spot, but I do think it's interesting that to learn that both of you really believe in starting with the Holy Grail stat, using it for some directional purpose, but not taking it as the Holy Grail, literally. I think a lot of people kind of get frustrated with things like that because there's one thing that bothers them on the list and it's like, how is that possible? And you can get stuck on that. But it's interesting that people that really make great use of this stat both kind of have a way different perspective on it, but your perspective kind of matches even though it's across sports.
That is undoubtedly the largest problem that I had trying to explain things to former baseball players 10 and 15 years ago. Anyway.
All right, sorry, I knocked things off course.
Let's you get back did, on. Very much so.
No, that's a really good conversation though. I mean, it's completely right. Like people do it, have such a hard time wrapping their mind around like, just because we say a guy is 12th in this all-encompassing metric doesn't mean he's actually literally the 12th best.
Yeah, how is that possible?
Yeah.
Definitely get enough of that.
One of the things that's cool about Ryan's Twitter feed, particularly CFB Film Room, is that you can kind of go through Twitter and you can just pick off talking points that you can talk about on a podcast. So let's start with this one. You tweeted the edge pressure rate leaderboard for NFL draft prospects. You mentioned it already today. Kayvon Thibodeau at 19%. Hutchinson and Karlaftis, the next two. Last week, Hayden Winks talked about how much he liked Thibodeau. Are you team Thibodeau too?
Yeah, I am. He'd be my top edge rusher for sure. And like, I mean, we already talked a little bit about how he blends both traits and production at the very top of the draft. For me personally, that's what I'm looking at. Obviously, one of the reasons we have to acknowledge like the character, work ethic, motor concerns, like sort of that vague category of stuff is one of the reasons why it seems like he might fall a little bit further than the traits would indicate. For me personally, I tend to try to ignore that kind of stuff, for one, because I can't just sit down one-on-one with him and get, you know, the best answers possible. So it's hard to factor that in. But even when we do have some information, like I'm sure there's something there. Obviously, he's rubbing teams the wrong way, and that's not irrelevant. But I also feel like the type of stuff that's said about him, if you put him in the right situation, it's going to be completely irrelevant. Like if you get him into an environment where he feels comfortable and he fits in, we're never going to hear about it again. If you put him in a bad environment with sort of a toxic locker room and a coach that's not good at handling those types of players, it could become an issue. So you got to have some confidence in your coach, but hopefully every team does have confidence in their coach, and that's why they hired him. So I would be inclined to not factor that into my grade at all.
Yeah, like you hear a lot of talk about that. You don't hear a lot about the fact that he led edge rushers in this year's draft in broken and missed tackle percentage. Not a lot of people talking about his tackling ability. Somehow it's all about like what's going on in those hidden meeting rooms that may or may not be to his detriment. We'll see.
So next on your list, you had Ahmad Gardner stat. No completions allowed 15 or more yards on more than 450 coverage snaps. And you asked the question, is he CB1? I know with us, he's not CB1. He's CB2. Is he CB1 for you?
He is for me. Is it Stingley for you guys?
It's Stingley for us. And I will mention that our grades do not incorporate injury risk. So we'll have to run it through our, you know, John Veros to see if he would approve the actual selection. But we do have Stingley up above, but both of them at that 6'9 grade. We're talking about number one corners, both of them, I think.
Yeah, I have Stingley too, and it's relatively close for me. With Gardner, for me, again, it's like the traits and the production. The production, I mean, there's a million stats out there that demonstrate how productive he was. And he also has the traits. He has just the length that almost every team would prefer to have at cornerback. It's hard to find guys that have his kind of height and length on the edge. And then also one of the other things that really kind of stands out to me, it's a little bit hard to like quantify how much this matters, but I think it's really telling how much the coaches in that conference decided to stay away from him, especially considering that on the other side, he had Kobe Bryant, who's also going to get drafted. Like Kobe Bryant on his own, if Gardner wasn't on the other side, we'd be talking about them avoiding Kobe Bryant. He is that type of talent in that, especially in that type of conference. He would be like the superstar of that defense if he didn't happen to be lining up across from a, you know, probable top five pick. So the fact that they were like, you know what, we'll take our chances with that NFL quarterback as opposed to the other guy, that really sticks out to me. Like clearly the coaches who were studying him week in, week out, and trying to make decisions on how to design their offense felt like this guy is just on a complete other level than everybody.
Did you have Kobe Bryant as your CB3?
I don't know. I have him down a little bit further, but certainly in like the day two range, I think he's a worthy day two pick, which in the American Conference, like that's usually as good as it gets. Like that's a big deal for them to have a player in that range.
Yeah, it's nuts. And then you add Ritter to that too. And I mean, like you see why Cincinnati was in the playoff. Kobe Bryant for us is their number 34th ranked player overall. He's at a 6'7 grade. So another NFL starting level grade. So literally two starting NFL level corners on that defense. And like you said, Sauce Gardner, what's not to like? 6'3". He's demonstrated the ability to press all over the place. No completions because people just were afraid like hell to stay away from him. So there's definitely a lot to like there.
From cornerbacks to receivers, you gave us a bunch of tweets about NFL route adjusted stats. Explain what that is. Give us a notable player and how their stats change as a result.
Yeah, I love these stats. And you can use them for quarterbacks, receivers, and for defensive backs and coverage. Basically, what I did is you guys have stats for each individual route. So we can look at each route and we can see what's the average completion rate here? What's the average yards after catch rate there? For defensive backs, how often do they make a play on the ball against the different route types? And the numbers are exactly as you would expect. Like on a screen route, the catch rate on catchable targets is extremely high. It's like 96% or something like that. Whereas on a go route, the catch rate is like 44%, something like that. And same thing on like the flip side for defensive backs, you know, the what we call the ball hawk rate, the ability to make a play on the ball on a screen route is basically zero. You're not interrupting those plays very often. But on a go route, you have an almost equal opportunity as the wide receiver to go back in coverage and make a play on those balls. So it really helps. And it helps isolate what you were asked to do. So like receivers, especially, there's a wide range of roles that you can play at wide receivers. And so you're going to get a wide range of catch rates that can be a little bit misleading. And I'll bring up an example, sort of like a proof of concept example from a couple of years ago. One that really jumped out at me was from the 2020 class, Jalen Reagor, when he was coming out of TCU. His numbers were not great. And a lot of people were really quick to just sort of brush it off because his final year in college was Max Duggan's freshman year at quarterback. And he had kind of a rough year. And so people were sort of like, yeah, the numbers were bad, but it was Duggan's fault. Let's just ignore that and look at the traits because he ran really well, certainly dangerous when he did have the ball in his hands. But if we looked at the route adjusted catch rate, which again, removes uncatchable throws. So anything that was obviously Duggan's fault, the way you guys chart your stats, that was already taken out of the equation. And if you look at him, he had a negative 8 route adjusted catch rate. So 8% below expected. And really everybody else in that draft class was significantly higher than that. As expected, most guys are above average. That's why we're talking about them going to the NFL. So that really jumped out at me. I don't know how I would have approached it if I had been looking at this a few years earlier without access to that stat. I may have been inclined to follow suit and be like, yeah, it was probably Duggan's fault. Like, he's an electric athlete. I'll just brush that off. But I took that into account. That was looked like a big red flag to me, and it really stood out as a meaningful number.
It fits in with how often production is more, your college production can more dictate your floor, whereas your athleticism can dictate your ceiling. I think that's like a pretty good example right there of how you were discussing earlier. You want both the athleticism and the production. That's why, yes, Rager, you could see some of the physical traits there, but I think there was also reason to be a little bit buyer beware because of the lack of production. And it wasn't just about the quarterback, as you pointed out. I'm really curious because usually when you look at sort of breaking things down the way that you're breaking them down, you might find one sort of relationship. Like, you might be looking for how good is this guy given the routes that he runs, which is interesting in its own right. Do you also get something from here's what he's asked to run? And how does, like, I'm curious to hear how you analyze that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you scroll through that CFB Film Room Twitter feed, you'll see some charts I post where I highlight the most common routes for different receivers. And I think that's really telling too. I always like to say, like, just because a guy didn't do something in college doesn't mean he can't in the NFL. But if he didn't do it in college, we've just got to put a big question mark over that. You can't automatically assume it's going to happen. So yeah, I think it's really helpful to look at the types of routes that they've run. All else being equal, I'd much rather have a guy who has run a more complete route tree and had success throughout that. So yeah, being able to look specifically at what they were asked to do, really helpful.
Seems like a great time to promote the SIS Data Hub, pro.sisdatahub.com. Matt, you want to give some of the highlights?
Yeah, pro.sisdatahub.com. So for anybody that's been checking out the NFL draft site at nfldraft.sportsinfosolutions.com, you can see a lot of our great high-level stats that we have at Sports Info Solutions, some of the key analytics, the scouting reports that we've been talking about on all these players. But if you're really interested in the premium, like what Ryan McChrystal uses on the CFB Film Room account and what he does when he's writing at Sharp Football Analysis, you can see at pro.sisdatahub.com. Basically, we give you the ability to query our database like you are Alex Vigderman yourself and break things down in any sort of way that you can imagine so that you can see how a quarterback is performing on three-step drops against cover two when the receiver is lined in a solo split. Really, anything that you can think of, all of the different charting data points that we collect at SIS, we give you the power to learn whatever you want to learn and to often come back to us on the SIS Off the Charts Football podcast and educate us on how you've created route adjusted stats and different things like that. So it's pro.sisdatahub.com. That's our premium service. Please check it out.
And Ryan, let's talk running backs. Did you find anything cool on pro.sisdatahub.com about them?
Absolutely. One of the things that I've always looked at with running backs, even before diving into advanced stats, is there's two key factors that I want to know. Like, one, can you create explosive plays? Can you, turn the corner and break off big long runs? And that's fairly easy to look. You can see that pretty well just by watching the games, and data on long runs has been available for a long time. The other thing that I want to know is, can you avoid negative plays? Like, if something goes wrong, can you make something happen as opposed to just getting stuffed in the backfield, stopped dead in your tracks? And you guys have a cool stat on there is where you can look at where first contact was made. And so it doesn't perfectly do this, but it sort of sets up the scenario like, okay, the play's been blown up at the line of scrimmage. You're contacted at or behind the line of scrimmage. What do you do next? And going back to last year, one of the things that made me sort of elevate my opinion of the North Carolina running back that went to the Broncos, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Javonte.
Yeah, Javonte Williams. Yeah, that looking at that sort of stat and seeing how successful he was in that situation sort of caused me to elevate my opinion of that, because he sort of jumped out as a running back that, like, the play gets blown up he's still going to get you 1 or 2 yards. And that's meaningful. Like, it doesn't look like a lot, but just to sort of like provide a real world example, let's say it's 2nd and 5 and you call a run play and it gets blown up in the line of scrimmage. If you have a running back that can salvage 2 yards, that's a big deal as opposed to getting stopped for -1 yards in the backfield, because 3rd and 3 versus 3rd and 6, that changes what you're going to call on the next play. It dramatically increases your odds of getting a first down. So I like to look at those kind of numbers. And looking at this class, unfortunately, this was a stat where it kind of soured on almost everybody, because it seems like most of these guys kind of struggled in this area. So when getting contacted in the backfield or at or behind the line of scrimmage, just to rattle off the numbers for some of the top guys, Breece Hall, who is my top running back, I think he does bring a lot of quality traits to the table, but in that situation where he was contacted at or behind the line of scrimmage, he was stuffed for 0 or -yards 54% of the time, which ranked 111th in the country. So that's a big red flag that he's maybe not the type of running back that's going to consistently get you something out of nothing. Same thing with Kenneth Walker. He ranked 89th. Isaiah Spiller ranked 90th. So a lot of those guys seem to sort of be the type of running backs that, yeah, they have a lot of traits that we like, and you get them in a good system behind a good offensive line, they'll probably do okay, but they may not have those special traits that allow them to produce even when things go wrong.
It matches the eye test, what you see with these guys. You know, the big play potential is definitely there when you look at Breece Hall, Isaiah Spiller. You see what those guys have produced as receivers is pretty good relative to the class. What those guys produce in terms of forcing missed tackles, definitely in the high end of the class. And then a little bit of a different flavor, Kenneth Walker, probably more of that 1st and 2nd down, trusting his vision and his contact balance a little bit more. But none of these guys, yeah, we have that stat on NFLDraft.SportsInfoSolutions.com. That is your positive percentage when hit at the line. And those guys are all way down the list amongst, you know, even the running backs this year. So that's, did you have positive EPA after being hit at or behind the line of scrimmage? Very similar to what you're talking about. And yeah, it's not pretty. So, I mean, I don't know how you could convince yourself to draft a first round running back this year. Like in 2022, I'm not trying to say anything. I love running backs. Like I have good friends that are running backs. Like all the best players on teams that I played on in high school, they best players went to running backs. So I'm not trying to blaspheme here, but given that there are a lot of running backs out there that exist that you can find, that you can fill on your team, and we can't really make a great argument about anybody being particularly special, it's hard to imagine that's still a conversation that's going on.
Yeah, it is. It just seems like a bad year. And I'm not even necessarily someone who like is adamant that you can't take a running back in the first round, because, you know, especially at the very back end of the first round, having that fifth-year option where you can draft a young running back, plug him in, and expect him to be one of the best guys in the league right away, which, yeah, unlike other positions at running back, you can have a guy in a reasonable contract for 5 years, and I think that there's some value in that. But yeah, like you said, the talent in this year's class, I don't think you should have that level of confidence in any of these guys to spend that kind of investment on them.
With the new GMs and the new coaches, are there GMs or coaches with a Gettleman-ish mentality that, oh, we gotta run the ball?
Fewer and fewer.
Right, no, exactly. I mean, like, that's the point.
I'm a fan of the way the Lions are trying to build their team, and they're definitely taking a build up front, be tougher and more physical than you type approach to things. And I think when you complement that with a modern approach, that's a great way to build a football team. Because at the end of the day, this is a violent sport and you want to beat the hell out of your opponent. That's part of winning the game. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody in the NFL now is trying to say, let's you know, become a run first.
It like seems that like- press conference was the last of its kind, basically. The one where Gettleman was like, you gotta be able to run the ball, and you gotta.
Yeah, it probably was. This is something that I've brought up in other conversations with people, that I wonder if, you know, we're gonna have to start to adjust our expectations for certain other types of players in the draft, because when you look around the league, there's just more and more young GMs who've kind of like come up through the ranks being exposed to analytics, even if it's not their background. Like the guy in Minnesota, it's obviously, yep, one of the more recent examples where that's his background. But even the other guys, just like anyone, you know, of the younger GMs, they've now come up around this stuff. And even if they've come up through a very traditional scouting background, they've still been exposed to it from a younger age, and they're getting more comfortable with it. And I think it's changing everybody's approach to it.
All right, we've talked for a good while, and we've avoided quarterbacks so far, which is good. Is there a quarterback you like outside of the top two, Pickett and Willis?
Yeah, well, actually, the number one guy on my board is Desmond Ridder. And I, you know, if we were to talk about traits and whatnot with other people, I don't think I would necessarily, like, hype him up beyond what anybody else would. It's sort of a little bit of like personal preference when you come to actually like placing these guys. And also, I should say the top six guys I have grouped pretty closely. Right. There's a lot of guys that I sort of feel like maybe they're a starter in 3 to 5 years. You know, 3 to 5 years from now, one of them probably will be and the others right. will disappear. But Ritter is sort of, I like the fact that he has a good blend of decision-making and athleticism. And I think the way that teams are playing offense, designing their schemes these days, that would be a pretty safe pick. You could probably comfortably, even as a rookie, design an offense around his traits where he's competent and you can win games with him.
He could function.
So, you know, I agree with the assessment that Willis has the highest ceiling. And I, you know, I agree that Pickett has a lot of traits that you like, that he has better accuracy than Ritter. But I just think the blend of that decision making and accuracy kind of makes it a little bit easier to build something around Ritter right now.
It is interesting, the level of consensus, because I didn't love Ritter in my eval on him. I felt like there are definitely things to like, but I kept coming back to what I thought was an inconsistent release, an inconsistent delivery that was leading to inconsistent accuracy. I don't always care about what it looks like coming out of your hand, but if it doesn't always get where you want it to go, then I start to look at that stuff a little bit more. And maybe that's fixable to like argue, you know, devil's advocate. We've seen people improve their accuracy, improve their mechanics. And if you think you can do that, then the decision-making that you talk about, I think it's like unanimous. I don't know anybody that's watched him, that's really studied him, that hasn't come away saying, in terms of him going through his progressions, the ability to read defenses, you see it out there. You just see a guy with feel. I remember seeing him in person at the Senior Bowl. It really, you know, being around Drew Brees all those years, just kind of you walk past him and you feel the energy that he has. Ritter has a little bit of that quarterback energy to go with that decision-making too. So I like that, but at the end of the day, I couldn't get there with the physical tools perspective. Some of the advanced stats actually come out in his favor a little bit more than I might care to admit. But I do think you're right that he's one guy that could come in. I don't know what the upside is. I've been saying this about Pickett too. I don't know how he's going to beat Mahomes and Josh Allen in that AFC Championship game without a really special team around him. But in terms of somebody that can be functional, like could win games for the Pittsburgh Steelers next year, absolutely.
So looking at our top six quarterbacks, just to run them down, maybe we can compare with what Ryan's got. Willis 1, Pickett 2, then Matt Corral 3, Sam Howell 4, Carson Strong 5, and Ritter 6. How does that compare, Ryan?
Yeah, so I'll just rattle mine off. I've got Ritter 1, Pickett 2, Willis 3, Strong 4, Howell 5, and Corral 6. But all grouped really closely together. I mean, I use a number system sort of out of 100, and the grades range from 76 to 69. So those are all grouped closely together. And that would sort of put them in the range of like, I could justify taking them in like the third to fourth round. Like,
I'm so happy that we've been doing these podcasts and Mark's always coming and talking about the big board and the rankings, and we've got them 1 through 6. And I'm here like, no, but the grades, look at the grades, you know, they're all this. And you basically have the exact same perspective on that. It's so easy to get lost in like, he's QB1. I'm like, yeah, but I said he's the 40th best player in the draft. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I've had that exact conversation about the wide receivers because I'm quote unquote low on Jameson Williams because I have him, I forget what, like 18th on my board. And I'm like, no, I think he's the 18th best player in this draft. Yeah. He's really good.
He's too low. We have the exact same grade on him and the guy that's ranked the number one at receiver, but he's too low, right? Funny how that works.
All right. We don't typically talk like team fit here, but we're going to talk team fit here for one question with two questions left. Is there a team fit, a player fit that you really like? Maybe one beyond the top 10 picks. It's not as obvious.
Yeah. I think one that jumps out to me would be Treylon Burks. If he's available for the Cowboys when they pick at pick, what is it? 24, I think he'd be a really great fit. That offense does a really nice job of setting up their receivers to produce after the catch. And that's a big strength of Treylon Burks. I think with the ball in his hands, he looks like a running back. He's really one of the few, I guess Drake London does a little bit, but who kind of can break tackles. And he's got decent speed too. He's not, you know, in the Chris Olave, Jameson Williams, Garrett Wilson group, but he has enough speed. And then you couple that with the ability to break some tackles. He's dangerous. And so, especially since they lost Amari Cooper, who was really productive in the slot for them, Burks had a lot of experience in the slot. I think he could probably not do all of what Cooper does because Cooper was probably a little bit better at getting open down the field than Burks will be. but he could, you could plug him into a portion of that Amari Cooper role, and I think he'd really excel.
Yeah, no more Cedric Wilson also there. So you have two strong receivers in CeeDee Lamb and Gallup that I think each have their own roles pretty well defined. I agree with you. Treylon Burks getting mixed in there would be pretty exciting. That would be juicy in Kellen Moore's offense.
That would be a steal for the Cowboys, given that we have him ranked as the 9th best player on the big board.
Yes, yeah. Unless you go back to what we were talking about, the receivers being bunched together, because, right. You know, pick your flavor with these guys, really.
All right, last question. To close, I'm going to pull one from the Wayback Machine here, a term that I used to use when I worked with Ryan at ESPN. Ryan, can you look into your McChrystal ball and tell us what the Browns are going to do, since that's your team?
Yeah, so one player that I've, in my mock draft, I've been doing a first-round mock draft, but then also listing up one player for every team that's outside of the first round, just to give those fan bases a little something to look forward to. And a player that I've had paired with the Browns is Drake Jackson, the edge rusher from USC. Knowing that they're a little bit of an analytically minded front office, they tend to be drawn towards players who have traits, which Jackson definitely has. He has the length that, looking back at their recent history, they definitely covet length from their edge rushers. He's got 34-inch arms, so I think he checks that box for them. They also tend to target younger prospects. They like guys who are young enough that it's a little bit easier to justify like a growth projection with them. And he just turned 21 this past week, so he's actually one of the youngest prospects in the whole class. But they also value experience, which is, it's hard to find guys who have the youth, especially in this draft class, where we've got much older draft class than usual, the youth and also experience. But Jackson came into USC as a freshman and was really good right from the start. He's a 3-year starter. He had his season cut short due to injury this year, and obviously the COVID year cut into his playing time a little bit. So his snap count probably isn't as high as you would like, but you know, that's true of quite a few of the younger prospects because of the COVID year. So I think he checks a lot of those like analytic type boxes that they're going to look for. And it's a definite position of need.
Yeah. Young, athletic, played early. That's pretty much what the algorithms will tell you to go get.
Right. And the thing that's interesting here too, is this is one where I think we would disagree, right, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, we would disagree. I'm not going to say.
You're allowed to critique. He's, you know, on our board, he's the 15th ranked edge rusher.
Yeah, yes. I mean, there's a range of opinions once you get outside the top 5 guys at all of these positions this year, probably more so than usual, I think.
Is there an edge rusher that's a better fit for the Browns than him?
One guy that I think, you know, in a similar spot on our board, to go back, Mark, that I'm interested in would be Sam Williams out of Ole Miss. Sam Williams is a guy that I get excited about when I think a little bit deeper, and because I get more interested in the production guys that I think have enough from the athletic perspective, which is just flipping on its head, kind of the really great athletic potential with a mix of production. Like we talked about again at the beginning, you kind of got to start choosing once you get a little later in the draft, which way you're going to go. So he's a guy I get excited about there.
Ryan McChrystal, sharpfootballanalysis.com. It's where you can find all his content. CFB Film Room on Twitter. Every tweet gives you some sort of knowledge on this year's NFL draft. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ryan. Keep crushing it.
Thanks for having me.
And this wraps up the Off the Charts Football Podcast. We'll have blanket coverage of the NFL draft on our Twitter feed, football_SIS. And you can head to nfldraft.sportsinfosolutions.com, where up to 400 scouting reports, key data points and analytics on every player, complete analysis on the best fits for every NFL team, research studies, and much more. It's the most comprehensive draft site that you can find. And then come Friday morning, we'll have another podcast reviewing all the first-round picks. For Ryan McChrystal, Matt Minicharian, and our producer Justin Stein, I'm Mark Simon. Thank you for listening to Off the Charts.